they want to be like us. If you can't
Hell yeah.
be us, be like us. And however that goes, doesn't really go like that. I'm just riffing. All right, so we're going up in 3, 2, 1.
3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Learn Videography, a podcast dedicated to mastering the art and business of becoming a full-time videographer. Presented by Industry Jump. Hosted by director Kyle Loftus and producer JJ Englert. Let's go.
Welcome back to Learn Videography, your podcast to learn everything you need to know about becoming a full-time videographer. As always, I'm here with my co-host Kyle Loftus, and today is our third episode of season 3. We're back at it, back in the swing of things. One episode every single week. It is your one-stop shop to knowing everything you need to know about growing and scaling your video production business. Kyle, how are we? How was your Thanksgiving break?
It was great, man. I'll tell you what, though, it was definitely a struggle when it comes to running the business. You know, I definitely took a little time off there and just chilled and didn't do too much. So it was a nice little refresh. But we're doing a little catch up right now. So little behind, but we're catching up. How about yourself?
Good. Yeah. You know, I had the same problem. Problem being shutting off and like just enjoying the vacation, right? I think I could shut off like a day. 2 days, but then after the second day, I'm like itching, like I gotta do something, right? Yeah. And so it's hard for me to manage that work-life balance in that sense. And you know, as a business owner too, it's just like you're always constantly turning of like what client you could find next, who, like if you have any deliverables that you're trying to get to and stuff like that, right? So it's tough. You know, one of the things that I've been meaning to say is like I think we should all set standards for ourselves of like only answering clients between certain hours and stuff like that. Like, do you like want to set the precedent of responding to a client at like 10 o'clock at night? Like, or do you just like wait in the next morning and like at 9 a.m. then follow up? Like, what do you do, Kyle?
Yeah, I mean, that's actually a huge thing I've really put a focus on this year. I can't remember the name of the book. I'll have to shout it on the next episode for us, but it's a really great book. It's all about the idea is, you know, you can't really manage time, but you can manage yourself and kind of mm-hmm. controlling that. And a big thing it talks about, you know, is setting specific hours to lock you into things. So like a big emphasis is obviously later in the day, your willpower kind of deteriorates. You're more willing to just eat the ice cream, right? Or relax and watch TV. So the idea is put your focus hours early in the day. So for me, yeah. you know, I don't even open up my calendar for calls until 4 p.m. So I've got the whole morning and early afternoon to burn through and get just dial in and really focus on the important factors. Same thing with emails. You know, I'll check in the morning to make sure there's nothing like significant that I need to respond to immediately. Just kind of looking over the subjects. And again, I think I mentioned in some previous episodes how I label. So that kind of helps. I know if it's of a production or just a general inquiry, but I generally save emails till about 6 p.m. as well. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, that's responding to an email isn't going to necessarily make a big change or big progress for my business as compared to completing an online course or finishing that edit or sending out 4 treatments to potentially get new clients, things like that. You know, that's going to get me more clients. That's going to get me more work and more money. So that's kind of how I try to manage my time. And so I did a little bit of that during Thanksgiving. You know, I made sure every morning I set aside some time to check in with clients. Business has kind of slowed down with the holidays. So right now I'm putting a lot of emphasis on reaching back out to my current clients, making sure everything's good. They're happy, just wishing them happy holidays and seeing if we can make some other things happen with them before first quarter comes in and things get crazy again.
Yeah, I feel that. And, you know, it's whatever schedule works for you, right? It's not typically like a 9 to 5 because we work all different hours. Maybe we edit at night or whatnot, right? So I think what's important from that to take away a little bit from that is like find what works for you, right? So if you like to edit at night and, you know, you edit from like 8 to midnight, all right, well, make sure that on the next day on your calendar, you have it blocked off until 10 a.m. so you can get some good sleep in, you can hit the gym, and then maybe 10 to 1 o'clock, you take client calls, and then after that, you get back into it, right? So, like, I think the point of this is, like, structure out what works best for you. Get into a routine. Get into a rhythm of that. Have certain hours for certain things. And even if you don't have, like, anything to do on that day, chop up a reel. You know, like, find ways to stay in rhythm and keep moving forward and not just like, oh, I got nothing to do today. Might as well just go to the movies all day, right? Like, you always got stuff to do. Like, you own a business, bro. Like, you always got stuff to do. So If you don't have anything right on the docket, find ways that you can make use yourself and your company better. And lastly, you brought up the holidays thing. You know, I know it's hard to take the time to reach out to all of the clients and thank them for a great year, or maybe send them a present or whatnot. But like, and I know a lot of us don't do it, but it's such a nice thought, isn't it? To like reach out to all your clients, wish them a happy holidays. If you could send them a little something, you know, like maybe like, you know, a behind the scenes clip of you on the set with them or something like, you know, just something to say, hey, I went out of my way to say thank you for all your business this year. Super excited to get something in the books for next year. You know, let me know kind of thing, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So I, you know, building on that, I think the idea that we're talking about today is how to build perceived value. And then yes, we're going to lead that into how to land bigger clients and bigger jobs. And then also finally talking about how to manage the cash flow for bigger jobs like that. You know, maybe walking through an example of a $50,000 to $70,000 commercial music video, how a small business like yourself can manage that cash flow. So we're going to get started right away with building perceived value, right? And Kyle's going to get us started with that one.
Yeah, guys, jumping right into it, you know, what exactly is perceived value and why does it matter? So perception is not always based in reality. The fact of the matter is a lot of us make decisions based off emotions, and then we'll try and rationalize it with something, right? And why this perceived value matters so much is because just by changing the perception your clients or potential leads might have of you, it gives you more merit and more value. It allows you to charge higher prices and appear better than the other competitors, you know, people that you're trying to beat out. So again, you know, like using an example, a great example I like to think of is like Kanye West has like huge perceived value. Drake, same thing, right? Like if I right now was to start a shoe brand and launch that brand and I launched it the same day as Kanye, for example, you know, he's going to blow me out the water because he has much more perceived value. Looking at like a very specific example, I did a little research and, you know, Kanye actually sold a pair of like custom auction shoes for $1.8 million. I believe it was in earlier this year or late 2020. But, you know, the average shoe in the U.S. sells for roughly $70 to $150. And so he essentially, you know, he like $18,000 the average shoe cost, essentially, you know. And like, again, you look at like Nike as compared to Reebok, right? Like it's tennis shoes. They're made with essentially the same product. Reebok's got incredible reviews. It's good product. It works. But at the end of the day, you know, Nike makes so much more money. I think, you know, they make around, they made like $40 billion last year, whereas, you know, Reebok made around $4 billion. And again, that's all due to perceived value by building that brand that people recognize, that they love, they cherish, they want to be a part of. And because of that, you know, Nike's able to charge more for their products. They've got that higher perceived value.
Yeah, I mean, when Kanye can sell a shoe, a pair of shoes for over $1 million, right? Like, it's not because the shoe, you could fly with it or something like that. It's just
it's
because
not worth $1 million.
They want that shoe because that's what they perceive it to be worth, right? And we as content creators and video business owners, we have the same value or perceived value that people see us with, right? And it just could be like your Instagram presence, your website presence, when you meet in person, the clothes you're wearing, the car that you arrive in, right? Like all of that creates perceived value. You know, like if your client, this is probably a bad analogy, but if you're a client and we're pulling up for lunch, right? And I pull up in a Lamborghini or I pull up in just like a busted old car, right? If I pull up the Lamborghini, the client's probably going to say, I can't afford this guy. Right? Or if I pull up in a busted old car, it's like, oh, this guy might shoot me a video for free. Still the same person. I'm still offering the same services, right? And I'm not saying you got to go out and buy a Ferrari to get bigger budget.
Do you shoot with a red, bro?
You just bring the red camera to lunch.
I mean, but to be honest, you know, I mean, I did a similar thing about 2 years ago. You know, I mean, granted, I needed to make that jump as a cinematographer, but you know, I was shooting with a Pocket 4K and I went and got the Ursa Mini G2 and instantaneously, you know, I could charge $1,000, $1,500 more. Add a matte box, I can add another 200 because again, it's just,
it looks more like a cinema camera.
100%. It's the perceived value. Again, we talk about putting out the BTS photos, the branding content, seeing the big set, all the lights, there the big it camera. It's that perceived value. You know, people, they want to be a part of that. It appears, it's so appealing to them. And again, they foresee what the potential is there. It has higher merit. Right. Whereas compared, if I'm just using a little DSLR camera, I'm by myself, I have a little handheld light, I might be able to create just as great of content, but I'm not going to have the same perceived value as the other person. And therefore, it's going to be a lot harder for me to charge the same price.
Boom. That's exactly it. BTS is a perfect example to bring this back to, right? Because say one example is you have tons of BTS, like you, Kyle. Great BTS, you're killing it on set, you're working with teams, you look official AF, right? Compared to someone that has no BTS and they don't see what that process looks like, right? And so it's like with Kyle, the first example, you know that he's a professional because you see it. You know that he's got real cinema gear because you could see it. And so you just expect to pay, you know, a competitive price for that because you could see it, right? But if there's no BTS photos, there's nothing showing your proof of work, then it's like, I don't know what you charge. Like, I don't know what level you're at, right? So we don't need to keep hammering this home. I think you get it. But the idea is like, you need to figure out ways to build perceived value for your brand, your business, your work all the time, because that's going to pay dividends, right? So Kyle, you mentioned the other day, always you have a line item in your budget for BTS photos because you know that, hey, this video, it's going to make you some money, but these BTS photos are going to continue to make you money with more and more projects because you build more and more perceived value from each one of the projects you do, right? So be willing to invest money and time and energy into doing things that maybe don't help you today, but will help you grow a bigger brand and business tomorrow, the next day after that, the next year, because it all stacks, right? And once you're doing this, then it helps you become an authority in that industry, right? And if you're an authority, if you're a leading figure, an influencer, or something in that industry, then people want to work with you because it's like, if I'm making this great video and this guy specializes in that, I want to work with that guy because he built this stuff. He knows it firsthand. He's the best there is when it comes to this stuff, right? He's the guy, right? And so that goes so far. You know, if you can, you know, have high perceived value, if you can become authority, then you can start to make demands in the sense of like, this is my price and these are the demands that go with it. Like I know with Jacob Owens, he has a whole list of like, hey, if you're going to work with me, here's everything you need to do. And if I'm going to travel, here's how I'm going to fly. And if I'm going to, you know, do all this kind of stuff, here's how I'm going to do it. Because if you want to work with someone like me, that's what you got to do. Right? And that's the mentality you can start to build once you build up that perceived value, once you become an authority in the industry. It's like, hey, I'm the man or I'm the woman, like in an egoless way, you know, still professional and stuff, but like I could do this, I could charge for this because I put 2, 3, 5 years of work. You see it in all this behind the scenes photo. You see this brand, you see the clients that I'm working with. This is what I charge, right? And it kind of turns the conversation around, and instead of, you know, I think clients will always come and lowball you, but hopefully right away they just see the value in it, in you and your services, and right away it's just a competitive offer from the start, and it leads you to you know, suggesting bigger prices to your clients because it's like maybe they came at you hoping for a 5,000 video and you return with like an 8,000 or 10,000 and they're like, man, I don't know, like that's way over budget, but we get the chance to work with this person. Right, and this person on the last 4 or 5 videos got like 3 million views. And because of their audience, they could do this and this and this. And maybe we won't get this opportunity again. We got to go over budget and do this, right? And compared to the sense of, well, this guy came over $5,000 over budget. What are they going to do for me? Like, why? I don't want that. I don't got that money, right? So it's really that perceived value that you're building that is just huge for your video business.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think two quick things to kind of say with that in mind is obviously, as you mentioned, like lose the ego, you know, when you're kind of presenting and you know, be respectful, obviously, but also, you know, stand your ground. You know, I think it's important to stand your ground and to have certain numbers and figures that you stand by and you don't go lower than. Because at the end of the day, you know, if a client's keep pushing you lower and lower and lower, what do you think the experience is going to be like on set or in post-production? Change after change after change after change. You know, where's the guy who says, oh, man, $8,000, that's kind of a lot of money, but I really want to work with you. You know, how do you think that experience is going to be? They value you as an individual. They value your service and what you provide, which means they're going to respect you. They're going to respect your opinion. And I think overall, that's going to lead to a much, much better relationship and experience on set, as well as in post-production process. And then additionally, just really quick to tack on there too, guys, I think an important thing to talk about here when we're talking about building perceived value, you know, is we're not saying lie or put up this front or persona. You know, your value has to be tangible. You know, at the end of the day, you have to provide what you're promising your client. So I think that's really, really important. But again, when we're talking about being an authority in the industry, you know, how you can kind of do that again is, for instance, you know, how I've started to do that is, and JJ as well, you know, we put out the podcast, we're putting out educational content, tips, tricks, tutorials, different content like that. And I think what that really does is twofold, right? When you become an authority in industry, one, you're putting out all this educational content and content that builds credibility. Again, it allows you to say, hey, I know what I'm talking about. I've been there. I've done this. You can trust me. I'll get the job done for you. Secondly, and I think this is one of the most important things, is it allows you it gives you the opportunity to educate the client. Right. It gives you the opportunity to say, hey, a music video isn't as simple as I show up, I shoot and I edit it. No, there's a whole pre-production process. There's a hiring process. We have to get talent, crew. We have to get props. We have to pay for permitting. We have to pay for the location. We have to book all these things. There's a lot of paperwork, right? Like there's all these different elements that go into a production and making a project happen. And it's your responsibility, you know, to educate the client on that. So when you put out all this content and you educate the client in that way, again, it's going to lead to a much better relationship and experience and allow you to really charge those higher prices, because these individuals, these leads that are now clients, they understand what goes into the project, why it costs what it does. It's not $8,000 just for a video. No, it's $8,000 because I have to hire this guy, this guy, this guy. I have to pay for this permit. I have to book this location. I have to get food. I have to get insurance coverage, you know, travel fees, etc. So it really breaks down for the client. Okay, this is why it's $8,000. Like I have to pay for all these different things. It's like what I love doing with breakdowns like that is you kind of put the ball in the court of the client. It's like, well, I can't get the video without the lights. I can't get it without the camera. Can't get it without the direct shit. I need all this stuff. I got to pay the $8,000, right? So I think it really, really helps you in that sense as well.
Yeah, you know, and I thing I would say is like, yes, the client needs to understand lighting and camera and all that kind of stuff, right? But you also need to frame it in the lens of like how it's going to help them and their brand, right? To make sure that's not like, hey, I'm just spending up to get some anamorphics, right? It's like, right. You know, it's like we're doing this because we want to make sure your brand is completely flawless. It's on point, right? So we don't have to go this high. But then there's going to be blemishes, or there could be things that it just represents your brand in an imperfect way. And we wouldn't want that, right? So really make sure that you're framing it in the sense of you're doing this to help them, which you all, because this is why you're putting the video together. And you're making all decisions to push the video forward in one way. And I'd say a lot of that should also emphasize the editing time to make sure it's perfect, but also the amount of assets that you're going to deliver to them in order to give them marketing ammo up the wazoo, right? So totally, you know, educate them, but also educate them in the sense of this costs this much money and this is the value you're going to get out of it. And this is why you should do it kind of thing, right? Yeah, and I think going into that a little bit more is like your branding in general, right? Like thinking about Real Bros Media, Kyle, you remember them? We had them on season 2. They do specialty filming. So they have like a camera car. They actually bought a helicopter. They have helicopters now. And anyways, they show up on set, like they're branded out like crazy, like t-shirts branded, the van that they, the camera van that they pull up in, full branded, the helicopter is branded. So like you show, they show up and it's like, whoa, like the boys are in town, right? kind of thing. So, and then it's like, they are legit, they are professional. Like this makes sense why I'm spending $30,000 in this video, because it's not just someone that graduated high school. It's like, this is a legit crew, right? And then if you look on their Instagram, branded, really unique, engaging content. You look on the website, totally authentic, you know, great layout, awesome clients, etc., right? So if you have a brand that stretches from social media to being on set, your wardrobe, or, you know, the aesthetics, just start to finish, it goes a long way to just saying, hey, like, we're official, we're a big company, and we could do big things for you, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, 100%. I mean, again, it's, you know, we don't want to keep reemphasizing it too much, but, you know, there's going to be a major difference in what you're able to charge or what kind of clients you're going to be able to get simply from the matter of how your brand is perceived. Again, you know, if you went to my website and it was built on PowerPoint or some shit in 1995, you know, that compared to a sleek website on Squarespace, like, there's going to be a very big difference in how my brand is perceived. Again, same thing with Instagram. Like, if people go to your Instagram, you're claiming to be a cinematographer and all your photos are you with your dog or you and your girlfriend, compared to the guy who's, again, photos nonstop, videos nonstop, behind the scenes content, big sets, big crew trucks, grip trucks, all that stuff. I'm hiring that guy. Like, it's just it's way more appealing. I know he's in the industry. I know he loves it. I know he's, you know, heavily invested. Again, I just perceive higher value in his brand, in his personal brand, as compared to the other person. And again, guys, as JJ mentioned, you know, it goes into every little detail. You know, it's how you walk, it's how you talk, it's your font colors, your font and your colors, you know, the logo you use, again, the tone of voice
quality
you use
across the board,
everything, you know, it's that is what's going to distinguish what exactly your brand is, the feeling it has. And again, the perceived value that it then in turn kind of has as well.
Yeah. And, you know, quality is a major part of that, right? If you have just superior quality from your behind the scenes photos to your videos to your marketing assets, every step of the way, they just respect that. They're like, hey, we're getting, you know, someone that is a leader in this industry, someone that has worked with clients such as this. Everywhere I look, they are smashing, you know, whatever they're doing. I want to work with that person. Like, and honestly, I felt that way about other filmmakers too. Like, there's a couple of filmmakers that I graduated from college with, right? And it's just like, if I ever got the chance to work with them, or if I ever got some budget to like make a video, I think I would hire them to do it, because whatever they touch turns into gold, right? And I'm a filmmaker and I know how to do that, but whatever they touch turns into gold, right? So it's like, perceived value can happen with anything, right? And I think you just build that up by doing all the things we talked about, but just delivering gold time after time again. Be creative, you know, get out there and do new things and just achieve superior quality every step of the way. And once you start seeing it stack and it's a repeatable thing, that's what you're known for. So all these things go into getting bigger budgets and getting bigger clients, right? Because when you have more perceived value, then you can start to say, hey, this is what I'm, you know, charging. But if you don't have that, if you don't have an online presence, if you don't have any kind of portfolio to demonstrate this, it's really hard to get those bigger clients, right? And even, let's say, for example, I got a good example. So in the music video world, there's a lot of instances where an artist is on the come up, right? They just maybe hit their first record deal or something like that, right? And they went to high school with like someone that is a director, right? Or something like that. And I have come across it many times where that artist only wants to work with that director because, you know, they came up together, right? But that director doesn't have anything or any knowledge of how to do it at the big leagues, right? And so normally what record companies do, they'll say, okay, you can have that director, but you need to find a production company that's done this before and get attached to this and to produce this to make sure that we know you're in good hands, right?
Yep.
And so that's where I came in on several videos where I was that production company, that producer that would work with the label and kind of mentor this young director to get the director and the artist where they needed to be for this video, because that young director had no perceived value built. They had no portfolio. They had no reason to be trusted, right? But if they did, then it's just like, all right, take it. You're good. But since they didn't have any of that, they came to me and it was a bigger budget job and they needed to see that in order for that bigger budget to land, right? So
right.
That's a big thing about getting these bigger budgets. It's when there's so much money on the line, record labels, commercials, they just, companies, they need to see that you've done this before and that you can return results, right? And if they can't see either of those, they're probably just going to pass you up for someone that does, right? So I think that kind of goes into, spec work and that mentality of, well, how do you get the big budget gigs if you need to first create big budget gigs in order to get the big budget gigs, which is that chicken and egg problem, right? So you got to think about ways that you can create superior content that helps you build a portfolio of where you're looking to go. Right. And the type of work that you're looking to do and that level of quality. Right. Spec projects. We've talked about it a ton. It's essentially, first time listeners, spec project. It's you go out and you build a video for yourself. No one commissioned you to do it. You're doing it for a portfolio piece. Right. We went to film school with some folks that they made a homemade Tesla commercial. The dad owned a Tesla. Right. They went into the garage. Filmed this Tesla commercial. It was creative AF, and Elon Musk tweeted them out. They put that as the main video portfolio for their production company, and it led to a lot of work, right? That's a spec commercial, and that's a good example of it. They even got a meeting with Elon Musk from that, right?
That's crazy. It's like,
you never know where it can go, right?
100%. And
so that's them investing in themselves, time and money into themselves, and saying, hey, we want to build commercials like this. We need portfolio pieces that represent commercials like this. So we're going to team up, go out and shoot commercials like this, and then tag, Elon or the companies involved, distribute it so people can see that you're shooting commercials like that. And then you keep doing that, or you find other commercials where maybe they will give you a big budget so you can achieve said value, but maybe you just don't get paid. Right. And then you can leverage that to shoot almost like a spec for free. So there's a lot of ways that you can start to use your skill and talent to be shown on smaller scales, in the sense of like just on 1 minute video, instead of having to do like a 10 minute video, like 30 seconds of just premium high production cost, like cranes and jibs and drones coming in, making it look cinematic AF for 20 seconds. Right. That helps a lot.
Yeah. I mean, 100%. And I think the key thing with all that too, though, is again, as we talk about spec work, is really gearing it towards the niche that you're trying to really attack or where 100%. You want to pursue. And again, that goes into emphasizing the quality as well. So, if you're looking at yourself from a production company, like what is the quality point that you offer? Is it weddings? Is it music videos? Is it commercials? Or on an individual level, Where does the quality lie within your services? Is it that you're an incredible director? Are you an unbelievable cinematographer? Are you, do you own your own one-ton grip truck and you can provide all that material? You know exactly how to set, build up all these different rigs. Like what is the quality point you can offer? And so when you're looking at these spec work projects, you want to just really keep in mind like the niche that you're going for. And when you start attacking that and building this perceived value, again, that's going to allow you to easily start getting some more and better clients. Using myself as an example, talked about this in previous episodes. I did an Amazon spec ad for the Alexa, and I don't hear about it as much now because it was like 2 or 3 years ago. But when we first released that, I think I've got like eight or 10 commercial projects just from that one spec ad. Because again, the perceived value was there. It looked like it was, you know, a $10,000 commercial, 10,000 plus, right? It was high quality. People thought we actually shot this commercial for Amazon. And as a result, you know, we were able to get a lot more commercial work. So again, guys, you know, it's investing in yourself, time, energy, effort, and building up a brand persona, building up a perception. But again, making sure you deliver and you promise, deliver on your promises, and you really have the quality that you're promising your clients. Because, you know, if you don't, they're not going to come back. But if you have that quality, if you're transparent with your clients about where you're at and what you actually can provide, that's going to build trust and loyalty. And when you have loyal customers, they're going to come back time and time again, because it's a reliable product or service. They know when they come to you, they're going to get exactly what they want. They're getting exactly what they paid for. And it's fresh, it's ease of mind. You can kind of eliminate all the worry there, guys. So again, it's just really, really important you kind of emphasize on these different areas when you're trying to build that perceived value.
Yeah, I think one last thing I'll hit on. Back in season two, Josh Emmerich, great guy, owns a production company as a cinematographer, right? And he was saying in his story of like, hey, he was just getting $2,000-$4,000 videos, and he was looking to take that next step, right? And so what he did is he went to one of the clients where they would normally give him like a $3,000-$4,000 video and say, guys, I got this great idea for you. It's going to require a little bit more money, but I really want to do this. And he sold him on the vision, right, of making this amazing video. But he also told him, you give me $6,000 and I'm not going to take a penny of that. All of it is going to go to the video because I want a better portfolio piece and something that is just going to smash it, right? And he ended up being able to get that video for $6,000, which is twice his normal budget, right? And he absolutely killed it in that video. And that was then his calling card that he used for all of the videos to get videos at that $6,000 and $10,000 level, right? And so that was him believing in himself that he could create a video of that caliber that would be able to be leveraged in the future to gather similar videos of around that budget range. And then also saying, hey, I'm not going to take any money from this. And instead, I'm going to go out and get a great camera. I'm going to get a great crew. And I'm going to do everything I need to make this video look like a $100,000 video. Because I know if I do that, then when I go out to get more clients, and I'm pitching and I'm sending out budgets, they see this reel that I could do this work of this caliber, I have a better time getting those videos. And sure enough, he said, as soon as he did that $6,000 video, instantly he was in that next budget range of like that $6,000 to $10,000, right? And that just, it really expedited that timeline of going from that $2,000 to $4,000 to that $6,000 to $10,000. It really helped him in a lot of ways. And I can relate to that, right? And I think that's a great way to go about it. You know, one thing I'll say with retainer work is fantastic, right? Like, I think we should all strive to get retainer work. But sometimes with retainer work, it gets to a point where you have a fixed budget and limited creative, and it's hard to like really put stellar pieces together every single month or whatever it may be, right? Because it really is a quantity thing rather than quality thing, right? And so if you're in a business where it's all retainer work time and time again, and you don't get that $10,000 video, you just get a $1,000 videos, right? Then I think it's up to you to figure out how you can stretch those videos to really get value like that, so you can create this perceived value, or to stack the cash that you're getting from these retainer videos and reinvest it into spec videos and other passion projects that will get you there, right? So just because you're in maybe an industry or a certain type of videos that you don't have the ability to do something like this, doesn't mean you can't create the opportunity for yourself to go out and create a portfolio piece or two or three that you can leverage to get bigger videos in that niche that you're looking for.
Right, right. And I think with that being said too, JJ, I think a big thing to keep in mind, especially, you know, for our listeners here, guys, gals, you know, if you're in your first 1 to 3 years, you know, obviously, you know, if you're doing this full time, then you got to get some money, right? You got to get enough money to cover the expenses, put food on the table, etc. But with that being said, you know, you shouldn't be looking at projects this early in your career with the idea of how much money can I make off of this? Every single project, you know, I think you should be looking at it as an investment. Just like Josh was, you know, like invest in the project and making it as good as possible, even if that means sacrificing most of or all of your cut of that particular project. I think it's really, yeah, really important to do that, because again, it's going to allow you to build that perceived value so much faster. It might feel like it hurts in the beginning because you're giving away hundreds of dollars, right? But at the end of the day, you're going to make so much money so much faster by building that brand perception. Getting kind of that sweet return on investment will come in the end. So again, you know, it's for myself, you know, even if the client doesn't want behind the scenes photo and video, I will pay for it out of my own budget, because I know that it's going to allow me to continue to build my brand, continue to build, you know, the perceived value that I have.
Yeah. You know, all of that is on point. And I, you know, we've talked a lot about like how to get these big budgets, right? But I want to quickly give a little bit of service to how do you actually execute on these big budgets, and like, how do you manage the cash flow for big budgets like this, right? And walk us through maybe a scenario where, so I was doing a music video for Major Lazer, right? $70,000 nice music video that I was producing. Small company, don't have the cash flow to front something like that, right? So there's ways that you got to structure that deal so you can, you know, cover that, because as you know, you don't get paid all 70 grand up front, right? You might get paid whatever, right? And then you got to figure out how to do the rest of it, right? So I'm just going to break it down a really simple way that you can kind of understand this, right? So first off, you're talking about budgeting. How do you even budget out $70,000? Big thing you want to do here is I always just throw in a 20% contingency. This is just like, if anything goes wrong, it's coming out of this 20%, right? Because the more money that you're spending, the more chances there are of going over budget or that you need more
things
stuff.
Things going wrong.
Right? Yep. And so 20% just scales up. And even when I did features, I try to, 20% is a little high, maybe 10% for features at that level. But you always have a contingency in there of just like a, we call it the WTF fund, like whatever just happened, right? It's yep, coming out of there. So always make sure you have a contingency. And if you run a really smooth set at the end of the day, guess what? That contingency can go back into your pocket. But if not, at least you have a WTF fund, well, light breaks, et cetera, right? So always have a contingency in your production budgets. Then you got to negotiate your cash flow with your contract. So this deal is, was a record label, right? And so what we did was we were like, hey, we want 50% on signing. So that way we can start to secure crew, vendors, et cetera. And then day before, or week of the production, we want another 25%. So that way we have 75% going into it, right? And that will get us to cover most of it, right? And then what we do is we talk to our crew, and we have producers, directors, actors. So producers and direct, and then crew, of course. Producers and directors, they get paid the most, right? For the most part, right? And so what I would do is I'd normally go to my other producers, my line producers, my director, and say, hey, do you mind waiting 30 to 45 days for this payment, right? Because I know I'm going to get my final payment of this then. So, and if I owe you, you know, 10 grand, you know, it'd really help if I could just pay you one person 40 to 50 days out and negotiate that ahead of time, right? Rather than asking 30 to 50 crew members if I can pay them 40 days out, right? So I always go to the people that I'm paying the biggest amount and see if there's any flexibility with how I can pay them. Maybe I'll just give them a little bit up front and then the bigger end and the back end, right? So I negotiate with the bigger players. And then I also figure out, when am I going to be able to deliver this video and how long am I going to have to front the last 25 to 50%, right? In this case, it was just 25%. And we had a post-production schedule of like 45 days to final delivery, right? And so it's like, okay, well, I always want to pay my crew within like 2 weeks, right? But in this case, maybe I need to do a net 30 and get everyone on board to do a net 30, meaning I'll pay them 30 days of the production. And in that case, you need to actually have them sign saying, hey, I will pay. I agree to be paid on a net 30 for legal reasons, right? So depending on how my cash flow is looking, you know, I could do a net 30 agreement for my crew. I could do, put a lot of the vendor payments on a credit card that I'll pay off, you know, that next month or the month after, right? Credit cards are a great tool for managing cash flow in this situation, especially for vendors, great for rewards too. You're spending all that cash, might as well get rewards back from it. Love right? It.
Cash so back, maybe.
There's a lot of levers that you can pull at your disposal to say, okay, I got $70,000 I need to spend. I don't have $70,000 personally, so how can I manage this? Starts with having a good budget. Starts with communicating with the big players that are getting paid a lot of money when you'll be able to pay them. Then starts with figuring out when you could pay your crew and having them agree to certain payment schedules when you're hiring them, not like the day of. It's like when you're hiring them and say, hey, this is your rate and this is the payment schedule. If you agree to that, you can be hired kind of thing, right? Using a credit card for vendors, for big transactions with the vendors. And then staying on schedule with posts, make sure you get paid on time with that, right? And having things in your contract to say, hey, you know, if we're on schedule and we deliver you this video, you can't delay this, you know, this final payment just because you don't get back to us for a week or two, right? So having things like that ironed out, and to be able to talk through, think through, just smart tools that you can use as a production company owner to start managing those bigger budget videos.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved all of that, JJ. I think, again, just reharping kind of what we talked about earlier, I think it just goes back to setting the expectations up in the beginning, having those initial conversations, and just having, you know, clear communication and transparency, setting all those up front and making sure that, you know, it's not just a conversation. I think one of the big things I've learned, you know, it's not just a person in person conversation or a phone call. Make sure, you know, you're getting some kind of contract or you're getting something, even if it's just emails, you know, something that you can hold on to say this person agreed, you know, to do a net 30, or they agreed to wait 2 weeks to get paid or whatever have you. Right. Especially with the clientele, you know, obviously in the contract, build out a certain due date that you have to have that final payment by. All these things just to, you know, legally protect you again, as JJ was saying. But, you know, that's definitely issues I've run into the past, you know, just having those personal conversations with actors. Then they decide, you know, 2 days after the set that, well, hold on, I haven't gotten paid yet. And it's, well, you said you'd wait 2 weeks to get payment. And so, you know, having that email communication to refer back to say, hey, you did agree to this. And again, you know, if you still have issues, if you can try to find a way to be flexible, reason with them, maybe make it a week and a half or something like that. But again, having these kind of paper trails, having these contracts is really going to protect you guys and maintain that brand value and perception rather than have you lose it. Because as we all know, in cancel culture, takes forever to build the trust, takes a second to lose it. You know, so you really want to make sure you're protecting your business in every single corner.
Amen. You know, and hey, good communication, being honest and just getting ahead of all these problems with good communication, like it's going to solve nearly 100% of your problems, right? So start there, build out this perceived value. It goes such a long way, you know, really focus on quality, focus on a clear direction of your niche and building out a portfolio for that to attract bigger clients in that niche. And you'll be off to the races getting bigger clients more so than ever. And once you get those bigger clients, you're going to need a platform like Jump Studios to help you manage them. Jump Studios 2.0 is live now.
Let's go.
It's an incredible CRM platform. You can create clients. You can create projects. You can have projects in certain stages. So projects in pre-production, production, et cetera, move them along stages to keep you hyper-focused on where each project, where each client is in that stage, right? Once you have finished a project for them, you can upload all of your media, just a mass uploader. You can upload videos, BTS photos, et cetera. Send them one link that contains maybe like 20, 30, two assets for them, whatever you need them to review. One link, they get a professional review screen where they can go through, leave time-coded annotations, drawings. They can do anything they want to leave you feedback, which significantly increases your time to get that video to completion, which means you get more money quicker, right? And then once it's done and the video is wrapped, then you can send them that final presentation link. One link to download all videos, all BTS photos, all scripts, all treatments, etc. Everything you need to give to them. Ooh. Just one link. It has your branding. Everything. You just make them feel VIP. Jumpstudios.io. You get started for free. You got to check it out. If you're building a business that you want to scale, if you're building a business that you want to eventually add people to help you run and scale, you need a system in place. And Jump Studios is that system for you. jumpstudios.io. Check it out. You won't regret it.
Yes, sir. Sign up.
Boom. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to episode 3, season 3, Learn Videography, your podcast to learn everything you need to know about growing your video production business. We'll be back at it next week with a whole new topic, breaking down everything you need to know to scale that thing to the moon and back. If you're not following us on Instagram, follow us at Learn Videography and at Industry Jump. You can follow Kyle at Cal Visuals, myself at JJ Engler. Other than that, I hope y'all had a great holiday weekend over Thanksgiving. We're getting into the holidays now. Stay safe. If you have downtime because of the holidays, figure out how you can invest that to get your business locked and loaded for 2022 and make it the best year yet. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
Let's get this bread.
Yeah.